Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday, July 30th, and I'm Nat Cardos reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, pedestrian fatally struck by bus on Gintoli Lane in Arcata, fire updates on the Orleans Complex and Dragon Fire, and tsunami updates and recaps. So stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection these tribes have to this region.
A fatal accident occurred Tuesday evening when a pedestrian was struck by a bus around approximately 6:40 p.m. near Gintoli Lane in Northern Arcata, according to Redheaded Black Belt. The incident took place close to the intersection of Gintoli Lane and Valley West Boulevard. Emergency crews were dispatched shortly after receiving reports that a pedestrian had been hit and was unresponsive. The person was pronounced dead on the scene. The intersection of Valley West Boulevard and Gintoli Lane, located east of the traffic circle near the Chevron station, is currently closed. The closure is causing major traffic disruptions, and drivers are advised to use alternative routes. Specifically, take State Route 299 and use the Gintoli Lane off-ramp to access Gintoli Lane from the east. KMUD News reached out to Humboldt County, California Highway Patrol for comment, but there was no response before news time. Jordan Pangeline in recaps on the Orleans Complex Fire, the Dragon Fire, and the tsunami warnings turned tsunami advisories in Humboldt and Del Norte counties.
On Wednesday afternoon, just after 12:31 p.m., a full wildland fire response was dispatched after a reported vegetation fire in the McKinleyville Community Forest. Labeled the Dragon Fire, units confirmed in the area at the Green Diamond Road parking lot, including fire engines, two hand crews, CAL FIRE ATTACK, a tanker, and a helicopter, along with water tenders from Field Brook and Blue Lake Fire, along with units from Arcata Fire. KMUD News spoke with Jordan Kilberry, CAL FIRE Humboldt Unit's Fire Captain Specialist, for an update.
My name is Jordan Kilberry. I'm a Fire Captain Specialist with the CAL FIRE Humboldt Del Norte Unit. With the Dragon Fire, it's a little over a half acre in size in the community park here. It is the forward progress has stopped, and crews are actively mopping up the fire as we speak.
Kilberry urges the community to take fire precautions as we are still in fire season. Information on the fire can be found at fire.ca.gov under the Dragon Fire, and fire resources can also be found at kmud.org under the Fire Resources tab. KMUD will continue to update if changes occur. Looking into the Butler Fire, part of the Orleans Complex, it continues to burn in Siskiyou County, just a few miles east of Orleans and across the Humboldt County line. The fire remains over 21,000 acres, but containment has reached 67%. There is a red flag warning today for abundant lightning over dry fuels and widespread thunderstorms from 2 p.m. to 11 p.m. today. This will impact a broad area of the fire, extending farther west than other storms. Firefighters and aircraft are ready to support new fire starts on both the Klamath and Six River National Forest. Evacuation orders and warnings remain in place for the Forks of Salmon area. For the most current information, residents can visit the Siskiyou County Sheriff's website or Facebook page, or view the evacuation map at protect.genesis.com. That's protect.genasys.com. Many forest roads and trails in the region are still closed. For updates, check the Six Rivers National Forest website or the Siskiyou County Sheriff's Facebook page. Tune in to KMUD Local News for continued coverage of the 2025 local fire season. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Jordan Pangelinan. Yesterday, July 29th, a tsunami triggered by an 8.8 magnitude earthquake off Russia's Kamchatka Peninsula appears to have had only a moderate impact on California's western coast, with wave activity now diminishing in most regions. At 4:20 a.m., the National Tsunami Warning Center downgraded the tsunami for parts of the north coast, changing the status for areas south of the Humboldt-Del Norte County line from a tsunami warning to a tsunami advisory. However, both the Eureka Police Department and the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office had already stated late last night, soon after emergency alerts were sent to cell phones, that Humboldt County was under an advisory, not a full warning. KMUD News spoke with Lori Dangle, an emeritus professor of geology at Cal Poly Humboldt, to gain further insight into last night's events and the development that took place earlier this morning.
We are currently less than 24 hours from when a great earthquake occurred in the northwestern Pacific. That earthquake that happened a little before 4:30 p.m. yesterday, our local time, initially magnitude 8.0, then it got boosted to an 8.7, and right now it stands at an 8.8, which is really, really big. In fact, it's tied for sixth place in the largest magnitude earthquakes we've ever recorded in instrumental times. So big earthquake means potential for big tsunami, and a series of tsunami alert messages were issued. That earthquake did produce a tsunami. In fact, that tsunami is still being recorded throughout the Pacific, including in Humboldt Bay and at Crescent City. Since those initial alerts were issued, all of the U.S. alerts have now been canceled with one notable exception, and that is Del Norte County. The Del Norte County coast from the Humboldt County border to the Oregon border is still placed in a tsunami advisory, which means that current tsunami waves on the order of 1 to 2 feet are still being recorded in Crescent City's harbor. And our kind of cutoff for damage is about 1 foot to 1.5 foot. So in Crescent City's harbor, that forcing of the water energy in and out of the bay and in the small boat basin in particular is still capable of doing some damage. Now, it's important to note that there has been some damage reported in Crescent City's harbor. The early estimates say perhaps $100,000 worth of damage to one of the docks, Dock H, which is located closest to the entry to the small boat basin. When the boat basin was rebuilt after the 2011 tsunami, they specifically strengthened it and designed that particular dock, H dock, to take the brunt of the impact and thereby protect the rest of the harbor. Right now, we don't know the details of the damage, but the rest of the harbor is okay. And in fact, the boats that left yesterday afternoon and evening in order to get out of the biggest tsunami hazard are beginning to come back into the harbor now. Even though there's still an alert in place, it's a lower level alert. So we'll know much more about exactly what happened in Crescent City's harbor once divers are able to actually get into the water. Right now, it's not safe to do that kind of underwater inspection.
This morning, the U.S. National Weather Service in Eureka reported that the tsunami activity continues, though much of the coastline was experiencing a gradual calming of wave action. The agency noted Crescent City has remained resilient with rapid swings in water level over 3 feet and advised residents to, quote, remain cautious of dangerous currents throughout the day today. KMUD News also spoke with Ryan Derby, the program manager for the Humboldt County Office of Emergency Services, to clarify what the 8 p.m. tsunami alert signified in terms of advisories and warnings, especially for residents living in designated evacuation zones.
So last night, residents may have been a little confused by some somewhat contradictory messaging that was coming out. We had been in close coordination with the local weather forecast office, with the National Weather Service, Cal OES Seismic Hazards Branch, and they're working really closely with the National Tsunami Warning Center that's in Palmer, Alaska. So we had around 7:30 p.m. last night had Humboldt County placed into a tsunami advisory, which for all intents and purposes means that residents should avoid going to the beach, avoid coastal waterways, and for those that are, residents or tenants on boats in those coastal waterways, they should consider getting out of the water and moving beyond the immediate coastline. Later that evening, or later yesterday evening, rather, Crescent City Harbor was recognized to potentially be seeing upwards of 3 to 5 foot waves coming in. So they were upgraded to tsunami warning. And as part of that, the northwesternmost portion of Humboldt County up near Redwood State Park was included in that scope. That area of the county here doesn't have much population, and the immediate tsunami hazard for that portion of our county lies on the immediate coastline. So what we were seeing based on the forecast from the Tsunami Warning Center in Alaska, in coordination with our local, state, and federal partners, is that the entire Humboldt County coastline was expected to see between 1 to 2 foot waves, which is well within the threshold for an advisory level event. The challenge with that is the way that federal alerts through the wireless emergency alert system that the Tsunami Warning Center in Alaska uses, the way that works is they only have the ability to issue alerts at a countywide level. They don't have the ability to issue what we call geo-targeted alerts, where it's, you know, a small segment of a community or a county. So when that small portion of Humboldt County was included, the entire county received that wireless emergency alert. And the way that the breakpoints for tsunami alerting are set up, the closest one from, you know, Del Norte down in Humboldt was at Cape Mendocino. So that included, you know, within the federal warning, a solid portion of, you know, central and northern Humboldt in the tsunami warning, despite the fact that we knew that advisory level impacts could be occurring. So in coordination with Weather Service and Cal OES, we worked to help clarify some of that messaging. Our local weather forecast office was pretty quick in issuing some data and some maps that showed what the wave heights were. And after that warning was sent out to everybody, we quickly pivoted to try and explain that Humboldt County, as long as people aren't going to the beach or trying to take photos of the waves coming in, there's no need to evacuate for the event that we just experienced.
Derby further explained that during a tsunami event, two distinct types of alerts can be issued if waves are expected to reach land. Last night, Humboldt County received a warning advising evacuation for those in specific zones. Acknowledging the confusion this caused, Derby offered guidance on how to better interpret and respond to these alerts.
So kind of our alert and notification posture, the way that we do things, is for tsunami, we essentially have two different shape files that we use. There's a coastal zone that we issue to, and then there's an inland zone. In addition to the federal alert that everyone received yesterday, our office did issue a local alert just to the coastal zones in Humboldt County, and that was just over 35,000 people that received that alert. And for an advisory level event, typically we just message that coastal zone, you know, from the Humboldt-Del Norte border down to the Humboldt-Mendocino border, advising those coastal residents not to go to the beach, not to engage in recreational activities in our coastal waterways. Importantly for mariners, you know, if you're going out fishing in the morning, you shouldn't be doing that while this advisory is in place. Now, when we have a tsunami warning that could cause, you know, surges up onto land into our tsunami hazard area, that's a higher level event. And that's when, if it's a distant source event, we'd be sending out notifications both to the coastal communities, telling them of the need to evacuate, and then for inland communities, telling them of the need not to go to the coast for a tsunami warning. Yesterday, we did not issue those inland notifications because we knew that despite the warning terminology that was being used, it was an advisory level event. But again, for a distant source, we have more time to conduct our protective actions. So In the case of this earthquake that happened in Russia yesterday, that's about an 8 to 9 hour arrival time before first waves get to the West Coast after the earthquake, which gives us time to issue notifications, potentially dispatch out law enforcement to conduct PA announcements, public works to go and close beaches. Where on the flip side of that, if it were a local earthquake, those waves could arrive within minutes. So we try and message for a local earthquake that the shaking is people's notification, because we're not going to have time to conduct evacuations, and public safety agencies will not be going into a tsunami hazard zone when waves could be inundating within a matter of minutes.
Derby urges residents to take all tsunami alerts seriously, even if the situation doesn't appear severe at the time. He emphasized that conditions can change rapidly, and underestimating the potential danger could put lives at risk. Following official guidance and responding promptly to warnings is crucial for personal safety and the safety of the broader community.
Over the course of the past few months, really after that, that 7.0 earthquake that we had in December of 2024, our office has been really kind of analyzing and going through and updating all of our preparedness pages. So we have brand new content on all of our pages. It's humboldtgov.org/prepare. And there's a tsunami page on there that gives some really good information on how the community can prepare for local and distant source events. It breaks down the differences between a tsunami watch, an advisory, and a warning level event. And really, what yesterday and today's incident informed us is that we need to have a really proactive approach to communicate with the public in advance of these incidents. We did a little bit of outreach and driving around today, just kind of seeing how many people are on the beach, if there's anyone in the water, and we had conversations with a few people that were, you know, going out and swimming in the bay or checking things out from the jetty while the advisory was still in effect, letting them know that, hey, you shouldn't be out here. These hazards are serious. Although it may not look like there's a whole lot coming on, I think people get the perception that a tsunami is going to be this big cascading wave that comes through. And really, it's a really quickly rising tide. So, you know, when you think about going out and looking at a tsunami, most often you're not going to see this large wave coming in like you would in the movies. It's going to be fast moving water it's essentially flood water that you know, it can come really quickly, surprise people, and it's not just one wave. These tsunamis happen for hours, if not days, after the initial surge. So the big takeaway is that this needs to be taken seriously by all of our community members. Our office and all of our community partners need to find creative ways to get out and message this to the community, because we have earthquakes up here all the time, and this is a real risk for Humboldt County.
Some residents were skeptical about the confusing tsunami alerts, blaming recent cuts to emergency services, funding under the Trump administration, for potential shortcomings. However, Derby reassured that despite these concerns, the emergency response and communication systems in Humboldt County operated smoothly and effectively throughout the event. He emphasized that the alerts were clear, timely, and that local agencies remained well-equipped and prepared to manage such emergencies.
So I can say confidently that our alerting process was pretty expeditious yesterday. We were having hourly meetings with our state and federal partners, and there was no noticeable change in the way that process has unfolded. The initial earthquake happened, you know, early in the evening. We received the advisory statement from the National Tsunami Warning Center at 7:30 p.m., and then had our statewide call at 8 p.m., and then our local alert was issued at 8:06 p.m., so as far as process and timing goes, I would say that's pretty quick from the time of confirmation to alert issuance being 6 minutes. That's a fast reaction. And the confusion that occurred last night, tsunamis are a little bit tricky because there's some automated processes in place with the federal government where an earthquake of a certain magnitude triggers certain automatic notifications. And then there's a process of evaluation and impact assessment that goes into that as waves start hitting different buoys throughout the Pacific Ocean. So if an incident begins at, say, 5:30 p.m., it could be, you know, 1 to 2 hours before we have a clear idea of what the impact could be to the west coast of the United States. And then as that wave gets closer and closer, and as the first surge starts to hit shore, we get more and more accurate predictions of what the long-term impacts are going to be. So I would say overall, the coordination efforts between local, state, and federal agencies went fairly smoothly. There are certainly some coordination things that we need to work on with the Tsunami Warning Center about pre-notification to local jurisdictions before wireless emergency alerts are issued. That gives us time to inform our community members what's coming. But overall, I'm feeling really fortunate with the impacts that we did see in Humboldt County. But just like with every other incident or exercise that we do, we're going to have an after-action process that identifies what went well in response, but more importantly, the things that we can all collectively improve on to make it a safer and more effective response for our community.
Derby and Dangle both emphasized the importance of using official resources for alerts and to remain prepared in emergencies as things can rapidly change. As of 12:25 p.m. our time, the coastal Del Norte County remains under a tsunami advisory. Please see the latest information from the National Tsunami Warning Center. To stay informed with real-time updates, resources are www.preparedDelNorte.com or signing up for Humboldt Alerts. For your local guidance, follow KMUD and regional emergency management agencies. For updates, visit tsunami.gov or humboldtgov.org/318/OES or rctwg.humboldt.edu. To report local shaking, information on warnings or advisories can be found on tsunami.gov. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Jordan Pangelinan.
In National Native News, Brian Bull reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. It's been an up-and-down week for former Interior Secretary Deb Haaland. On the upside, Haaland has been deemed the 2025 recipient of the Chief Standing Bear Prize for Courage. The Nebraska Examiner reports that Haaland, the first Native person to serve as a cabinet secretary who addressed the missing and murdered Indigenous people crisis and the oppressive legacy of federal boarding schools, will receive the honor on October 13th in Lincoln, Nebraska. The nonprofit Chief Standing Bear Project recognizes those people who embody the spirit of the famed Ponca chief, whose legal fight with the U.S. government led to Native Americans being recognized as persons under the law. On the downside, Axios reports that Haaland did not get endorsed for her bid for New Mexico governor in the Democratic primary by the Sandia Pueblo. The tribe instead endorsed her challenger, Sam Bregman. While a small tribe, the Sandia Pueblo operates one of the state's largest casinos and is seen as influential in the commerce and entertainment sectors. Haaland is a member of the Pueblo of Laguna, who is Interior Secretary with the Biden administration. The documentary, Who She Is, humanizes the missing and murdered Indigenous persons crisis on the Wind River Reservation. As Wyoming Public Radio's Hannah Haberman reports, it just won a regional Emmy Award.
Who She Is uses animation to tell the story of four women, Sheila, Jocelyn, Leela, and Abby. It's not just about how they died. It's about how they lived, who they were, and what they loved. The film took home the Heartland Emmy Award for Best Cultural Documentary. Here's Northern Arapaho co-producer Jordan Dresser.
To win this award is such a big honor, and also it gets their stories and their awareness across bigger platforms.
And co-producer Sophie Barksdale.
Thank you to the families. We worked so closely with them, and we wouldn't have done it in any other way.
Who She Is came out in 2022 with showings at national and international film festivals. There's a screening planned for September at Central Wyoming College. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Hannah Haberman.
One of the biggest all-Indigenous high school basketball competitions in North America wrapped up this past Saturday in Phoenix. As KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports, two rivalries heated up on center court in the tourney finals at PHX Arena.
Good afternoon and welcome to the 22nd Annual Native American Basketball Invitational presented by Resolution Copper.
NABI began with 24 teams, but now it's grown to a record 204 with 3,100 athletes representing more than 160 federally recognized tribes from Phoenix to Anchorage, Alaska, 508 games in all, ending with Arizona's Rez Bombers having both boys and girls teams in the finals. The boys squad dropped the Phoenix's Young Guns, while the defending girls champs took on Oklahoma's legendary Elite in a rematch from last year.
And our final score, Rez Bombers.
Winning their third title in 4 years. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
And on this day last year, the Department of the Interior released the second and final volume of its investigative report on federal boarding schools. Building on an initiative launched by Secretary Deb Haaland and led by Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs Brian Newland, the report expanded the number of deaths of Native students, as well as the number of burial sites and the participation of religious institutions and organizations. The report concluded a three-year probe that saw the federal government accepting responsibility for its role in creating the system. Nearly 1,000 children died while attending these schools. I'm Brian Bull for National Native News.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashley. And thanks to our reporters, Jordan Pangelinan and Brian Bull. KMUD News is online, and you can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Matt Cardis.